We will call the Senate Tax Committee to order for April 24th, 2015. Today we have the Transportation Omnibus Bill, House File 4, Senator Dibble. And Senator Dibble, we had some discussion yesterday with you about an amendment that the Tax Committee and you worked on. Wondering if you want to put that on before you walk through the bill or later. Senator Dibble, I think perhaps we'll work on this later. So, Senator Dibble.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much for hearing Senate file. What is it, my Senate file again? 1904. House File 4 now. Appreciate the time and the consideration. Mr. Chair, members, this is the transportation bill. It is at once the standard transportation bill that we need to do every 2 years in order to appropriate the necessary resources so that we can provide for transportation services across the state. But as everyone also knows, there is an important need to invest additional resources in transportation. So this is also a major initiative, a major step forward to put additional resources into transportation to finish the work, complete the work that we started in 2008. 2008, of course, we passed a good bill, but not a great bill. That was after 20 years of need had gone lacking. And, of course, in the aftermath of a bridge collapse and some pretty stark issues of road degradation and congestion going around the state. We'd said at that time we'll be back before 20 years has passed because we're only doing a small step, and so here we are today. Mr. Chair, since that time, there's been a great deal of discussion, analysis, mobilization, a lot of engagement by stakeholders across the state. Really examining this issue, coming together in broad conversations. And in fact, there was a pretty in-depth and intensive analysis undertaken at the direction of the governor by a broad group of stakeholders, and much of what's in this bill reflects that work. So very quickly, I'll give a very, very high-level broad brush overview of what the bill aspires to achieve, and then we can ask our fiscal and policy analysts to walk us through. And, Mr. Chair, I assume you don't want as detailed or in-depth a walkthrough as we had yesterday in finance. You want to more touch on the revenue pieces.
And Senator Dibble, yes, we would like to focus in on the Tax Committee jurisdiction areas. So if you have some tax provisions that you'd like to talk to the committee about, let's concentrate on those. Members, you have a Minnesota Department of Revenue estimate and then our Senate Council bill summary in front of you, so hopefully those will be helpful as Senator Dibble and the Tax Committee staff walks through the transportation bill. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the two major efforts in the bill are to raise dollars that flow through our Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. The dollars that go into that fund are constitutionally dedicated, and they flow out on a formula basis to state highways, county state aid highways, and municipal state aid streets, as well as some dollars that flow through a little bit of a set-aside that get to townships. The way we raise those dollars are through an increase in the gas tax in the form of what we call a gross tax receipt. That's a gas tax that's raised on the price of gas sold at the wholesale level, and then it's converted to a per-gallon rate as we have now. And then flows and operates just like the gas tax does today. That's 6.5% on the price of gas at the wholesale level. There's a floor of $2.50 per gallon. The mechanism of how that works, it's the price for the previous year is averaged and established for the coming year in August, and then that amount goes into effect in October. Additionally, we raise by 0.25% on the value of a car with maintaining the current depreciation schedule. License tab fees goes from 1.25 to 1.5%. And the minimum tax of $10 is raised to $20. And like I said, the current depreciation schedule of 10 years is maintained. In the metropolitan area, we have a need, of course, to support and bolster transit, both building out transit ways and bolstering our bus system and providing for operating in the metropolitan area. We have an established transportation policy plan, the MAP, as they call it. Right now we're on a 40-year time horizon to finish that. We have something like a million folks that are coming to the state. Many of those are going to end up in the metro. Can't build enough roads to accommodate all of that mobility. We have to do much of that through transit. So we currently have a quarter-cent sales tax in five of the seven counties in the metropolitan area. We would propose to raise that to a full cent. So we raise that by three-quarters, and then it will flow out some through the existing county's Transit Improvement Board, most of it through the Metropolitan Council for the purpose of both building and operating our transitways. The corresponding change would be that transit in the metro area would no longer be supported either by operating or capital through the general through the state's general fund. Some dollars would remain with Metro Transit for the purpose of operating metro mobility. For Greater Minnesota Transit, another very, very important need, often doesn't get a lot of attention or get discussed a lot. What we do to support its existing level of service is we reallocate some of the dollars that go to Metropolitan Transit through the motor vehicle sales tax, additional 2%, but we also rebalance the split that goes to the Highway User Tax Fund and the amount that goes into the Transit Assistance Fund. And that's how we take care of Greater Minnesota Transit's base needs. And then we appropriate an additional $6 million per year out of the general fund to support growth that's necessary for Greater Minnesota Transit. For we have some initiatives for railroad safety, and what we do there is, and we know about all of the issues around congestion and safety and oil trains and the like, and it's been a major initiative in this legislature as well as from the governor to address that. And so we, similar to how we currently assess railroads and public utilities as a unique form of corporation, kind of a public benefit utility type corporations, we assess them for some dollars to $32 million a year to pay for a variety of functions, mostly to help improve railroad crossings with roads. We also pay for a governor's initiative to establish a freight rail office that has a safety function as well as a number of other functions out of that assessment. In the metropolitan area, a unique challenge around how we support the county state aid highways. This is a conversation that goes back many, many years, but most recently manifested in the 2008 bill in which we dedicated a portion of the motor vehicle lease tax that's collected to support the county state aid highway efforts in five of the seven counties in the metro area, excluding Hennepin and Ramsey. Without getting in too deep into a discussion, that turned out to be insufficient to the needs articulated, particularly by the five counties outside of Hennepin and Ramsey. But Hennepin and Ramsey continue to have those needs as well. Part of what we did for Greater Minnesota Transit was they used to share in that pot, but in order to get some more of those dollars over to the counties in the metro, we excluded Greater Minnesota Transit. We made it up, of course, with the motor vehicle sales tax and the general fund appropriation. We divvy up not all of those dollars because a certain amount of those dollars out of the motor vehicle lease tax go into the general fund, but we do bring in $10 million, and with the remaining pot, divide that up among the counties. It's apportioned on a per population basis. We bring in Ramsey and Hennepin. We cap Hennepin's population for the purpose of this formula at 25% of their population. We cap Ramsey's population at 50% of their population. The reason for that is that Hennepin's needs are mostly around transit. They do have roadway needs, of course. There's just a fairness issue at question here as well. But if we were to include all of Hennepin's population, all of Ramsey's population, they'd take almost all the money. So we really wanted to get those dollars out to the five counties. We also go to fairly significant effort to support municipal roads, both small cities and large cities. And the way we do that in several different ways, of course, we're supporting the formula out of the highway user tax fund, so more dollars will come through the municipal state aid fund. There's a 5% set aside, so we know how the highway user tax distribution fund works. We have this 5% set aside, then 62% goes to state highways, 29% goes to county state aid highways, 9% goes to municipal state aid roads. In the 5% set aside, we can change how we spend those dollars once every 6 years. It's been over 6 years since we've done that. Currently, how those dollars are allocated are to support township roads and bridges. Those proportions remain the same. They'll, of course, receive significantly more dollars because of the increase to the resources. The remaining was what we call a flexible, what do we call it?
It's a
flexible highway account. That's typically used for, the commissioner can use it for whatever he or she deems necessary, just kind of a place to go for a little extra dollars. Usually it's used for turnbacks. We establish, we take care of turnbacks in the regular state road construction program now. We use those dollars to get some more dollars to cities, both below 5,000 who don't qualify for MSA and above 5,000. In addition, we raise some fees on some vehicle transactions and dedicate those fees to two separate funds that are created for large cities and small cities, and we get some of those dollars to local roads in that way. Take some pressure off property taxes, get some dollars to cities that don't qualify for municipal state aid. Those cities that do qualify for municipal state aid, even with the increase, usually those dollars are absorbed. It's not a lot, A, and B, those dollars are absorbed very, very quickly by cost participation requirements from the Department of Transportation, so they can't even use them for what they need them, which is improving their major arterials in large measures. Those dollars get spoken for before they even have a chance to do anything with them that they see fit. Anything else? Okay, that's the broad brush overview. We have more detail that either Ms. Boyd or Ms. Berezovsky can
Pull the mic in just a little bit,
sure.
Please.
All right.
Did you want to have the staff walk through anything?
Yeah, why don't we do that at this
okay.
point? Thank you. All right, so Ms. Berezovsky will help us understand in detail some of the tax provisions.
And while she's getting ready, Senator Dibble, you mentioned the wholesale gas tax, and I think the governor had a little different mechanism for calculating the rate on that. And the reason that I ask about it is because DOR is always bringing issues of implementation to us. And I see you have a pretty aggressive timeline on the implementation of the tax. And have you worked with DOR? Is that going to be an issue for the Department of Revenue?
Mr. Chair, I think we I'm not sure what the differences are at this point. Our intent was to, for the most part, mirror the governor's initiative. What are our differences? Implementation. Oh, what are our differences?
It's the same. It's the implementation date. The effective
yeah.
date is different.
So, Mr. Chair, yeah, the implementation date is a little different. But the mechanism is the same. If we need to work on the implementation date to the satisfaction of the Department of Revenue, we can certainly do that.
Make sure you check in with those folks and
Great.
Make sure that that's all doable.
Great.
Okay. Ms. Berezovsky.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Senators, I will just highlight the tax provisions, at least as I recognize them to be tax provisions, and I will I'll let you know where they occur in the House file for unofficial engrossment before us today. First of all, Article 3, which begins on page 22, is the gross receipts tax, and many of these sections are just conforming the language and inserting references to the gross receipts tax because it's largely handled the same way as the existing fuel tax under Chapter 296A. And the tax is imposed under the same Chapter 296A. So the section 2 on page 22 is the heart of the article, and that is the imposition section. The rate is the tax is imposed on the wholesale business of selling the fuel, which is described as the means or substance used for propelling vehicles on the highways of this state. And that is the constitutional language that authorizes this type of tax to be imposed. The rate is 6.5% of gross receipts. It's imposed at the distributor level. In Subdivision 3, the Department of Revenue is required to convert the gross receipts tax rate into a rate per gallon of cents per gallon for ease in administration and applying for refunds and so on. And at that point, the commissioner makes a determination as to the average fuel price from the previous year around the state, and as published by the United States Energy Information Administration, to determine the price against which the 6.5% is calculated. And the rate for the next year then will be either that 6.5% or 6.5% of a $2.50 per gallon price. The greater of those two will be the rate imposed for the following year. I wanted to also call your attention to, and as I said before, the credits and refunds and so on are handled exactly the same as they are for the existing fuel excise tax. The tax receipts are dedicated to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund for highway purposes. Then I wanted to call your attention to some sections that in that article that are referred to shorthand as the DNR transfers. And those begin on page 26.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, is it all right if we ask questions as we go through the, or do you want to wait until after?
I would prefer, I think, if we could hold and do them all at once at the end. I'm trying to I don't want to restrict the questions, but I also am conscious of the time. And so, Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, beginning on page 26, sections 6 through 11 are the DNR transfers, and those are the off-road uses of fuel. And this nothing has changed in terms of percentages or uses, but it just incorporates references to the proceeds of the motor fuels gross receipts tax so that it's clear that those same percentages apply to the revenues from the new tax. And then Article 4 begins on page 28, and that is the vehicle registration tax changes. The changes there are as follows. The base tax that is $10 will increase to $20 effective July 1, 2018. Then the additional tax is changed in that the 1.25% of value that is used for the calculation now would be increased to 1.5% of base value, subject to the same depreciation schedule that's in statute now. That is unchanged. The section eliminates the provision that would cap the new registration amount at the smallest amount that was paid on the same vehicle before the law changed. And that exists in the law that was enacted in the 2008 changes. But this would take that language out so that the rate could increase, or excuse me, the tax amount could increase. This is, and that part is effective September 1, 2015 for registration periods that begin on or after that date. Article 5 begins on page 30, and that is the Metropolitan Transit Improvement Area sales tax. Should I go through that at this point? Or?
I was distracted. What was the question?
Pardon me, Mr. Chair. I wondered if you wanted me to review the Metropolitan Transit Improvement Area sales tax at this point before amendments or...
Ms. Berezovsky, I think it's basically on five counties, it's three quarters of a cent.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The old quarter cent, the existing quarter cent that's administered by CTIB still stays in effect. The new tax is 3/4 of a cent, and that one is imposed on 5 counties, not Carver and Scott. And the bulk of the receipts would go to the Metropolitan Council for transit purposes, transitway purposes, and some other grants and so on.
That's very good. Thank
okay.
you.
Oops. Then the next provision that I identified as of possible interest to the committee is on page 36, section 1, that imposes a new surcharge, a $10 surcharge, on an existing $10 fee. That fee is on vehicle registration and title transfers, and that one goes to the Environmental Fund. The new $10 surcharge would be divided equally between small cities and large cities for their street and bridge purposes. Section 8 on page 39 it's a Senator Kiffmeyer initiative, and this requires the Commissioner of Public Safety to refund vehicle registration taxes if the application is submitted within a grace period of ten days, the first 10 days of the registration period. And there are certain circumstances that would justify a refund of registration taxes. They're fairly limited. Then, skipping all the way over the license plate fee changes to section 29, which is on page 52. And that imposes also a $10 surcharge on vehicle registration renewals. And it also makes motor carrier fuel tax licenses subject to the existing $10 filing fee. The surcharge, again, would be divided between the larger and smaller city street funds, street and bridge funds. There's a $3.50 portion of the current $10 fee that goes to the general fund. And that would be changed so that instead of the general fund, the proceeds of the $350 would be divided between the smaller and larger city streets and bridges account. The next section is on page 55, and Senator Dibble talked about that already, and that is section 33, the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue, and the amount that is deposited in the general fund is changed from $32 million to $22 million, and the Greater Minnesota Transit is no longer a recipient of funds under this section. The entire net amount would be divided among the counties for their county highways, and Hennepin and Ramsey are brought in at a lower population level for division purposes. The money is divided according to population of the counties. The next section is section 34, also beginning on page 56, but 57 is the operative language. The rest is just changes in coding of the section to make it easier to read. It's subdivision 11, beginning on 57.21. This expands an existing motor vehicle sales tax exemption for towns that now applies only to towns for their purchases of road maintenance vehicles. They are not required to pay the motor vehicle sales tax. And this new language would expand that exemption to all local units of government for their road maintenance vehicles. Oh, by the way, it has retroactive application to June 30, 2014. Then section 36 on page 59 is a city parking facility fee. This provision is specific to the City of Minneapolis and City of St. Paul, and it would authorize either or both of them to impose a fee on commercial parking spaces within a specifically designated district of the city, which is largely the central business district or commercial district, the city would be allowed to set the fee, and there are some fairly detailed uses of or eligibility. Eligibility for the proceeds are detailed on 59.29 and down. There are pedestrian improvements and transit and bicycle facilities and so on within the district that imposes the fee. And then Section 37 on page 60 is that this ties back to the MVEST motor vehicle sales tax refund language that allows local government would allow local governments to go back and apply for a refund of MVEST paid on road maintenance vehicles after the retroactive effective date. Then the next provision is on page 65. It's section 7, and this would allow owners of towed recreational vehicles to pay their vehicle registration taxes either annually as under current law or once every 3 years. For a three-year registration period, the filing fee is tripled, and this takes effect, or it applies, beginning January 1, 2016. Sections 8 and 10 on pages 66 and then 68 create a penalty surcharge for late payment of vehicle registration taxes. That surcharge is $25 for each month that that the taxes are unpaid, or each portion of a month that the taxes are unpaid, and the maximum is $100. The proceeds go into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. Let's see. Then on page 87, section 19 directs the Commissioner of Transportation to impose an annual assessment up to $32.5 million on Class 1 rail companies. And the proceeds of this assessment would be used to establish a MnDOT Office of for rail grade crossing safety improvements and also for other freight safety and operations matters within the jurisdiction of the DOT. And then I thought I would maybe mention in passing also beginning on page 98. Section 27, it's the establishment of a road user charge working group. And the idea here is to look at what used to be called the mileage-based user fee and is now called the road user charge, and to for a group consisting of legislators, executive members, and public members to look at the policy implications and technical concerns having to do with the implementation of a road user charge, which ultimately would, the idea being that ultimately this could replace the fuel taxes to support the road system.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to mention two more things quickly. Section 31 on the last page, you'll see that we have a report required on dedicated fund expenditures. This is our ongoing effort to try to track closely what's being spent out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. Mostly not those things that that get transferred out because it's a function of gas taxes paid for those who aren't using the highways, but this is more about programs that are supported in the state government that maybe not have the nexus to highways, and we continually be concerned about that. And on that note, I did want to go back and touch on the increase to in the charge to replace license plates. What occurs presently is the Driver and Vehicle Services Division contracts with the Department of Corrections for manufacturing license plates. That contract is paid out of highway user funds. Certain amount, $8 million every year. 8.2 million, 16 million for the biennium. And then, of course, we get our license plates. We pay for those. The fees that we pay for our license plates then are retained in the driver services or vehicle services account. So what we're doing, in effect, is we're subsidizing the manufacture and acquisition of license plates with the Highway User Fund. And so what we do is we create that, we make that into a self-supporting effort by increasing the replacement. So it's $10 to replace your license plate. We increase that to $6 to replace your license plate. We increase that to $12.50. But we slow down the replacement cycle from every 7 years to 10 years. Specialty plates are $10, and we bring those in line as well at $12.50. So that, and that causes that whole activity to be self-supporting. That means we retain $16 million per biennium in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund.
Thank you. Members, I think we'll do questions. We have five people signed up for testimony and then amendments. Questions? Senator Orton. Senator
Sanchez. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dibble or anyone else, on page 58, where we start on page 57 talking about, I think it's a sales tax exemption on certain forms of vehicles that local units of government might buy. Why did we go back to that retroactive date of June 30th, 2014?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is a Senator Coonan initiative, and I'm just trying to remember the rationale. But I think the reason is that he was trying to make it effective for the present biennium that we're in, rather than prospectively.
Okay.
I don't know that he is.
Well, thank you.
Senator Sanjum.
I'll visit with Senator Coonan and try to get him. Well, and there he is. Okay.
Members, we went up to see if we can get him to quit pounding for a little while. Senator Nelson.
Well, Senator Coonan, if he has thoughts on that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Coonan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Dibble is correct. It was just to get to treat to bring in that whole year into the sales tax exemption, and since started part of that year had already happened and some of that had been paid, we felt it was just fair that we refund that portion, and then the refund ended, of course, when this takes place, because then that won't be paid anymore.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question's on page 59. It's about the city parking facility fee. And I just have a couple brief questions that I can't see where it says what that fee is, how much it is. But I think the bigger question I have is, could the city impose this on privately owned parking ramps that are already in existence, or is this on public ramps or ramps that are yet to be built? How does that work?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Nelson, the cities, St. Paul and or Minneapolis, if they so desire, I mean, they don't have to impose this fee, but it allows them to do so, would establish what that fee is. To your first question, to your second question, yes, both publicly and privately owned parking spaces would be subject, both those that presently exist and those that would come into existence in the future.
Just follow.
Senator Nelson.
I want to make sure. Did you say there's absolutely no cap on the fee? They could set that at any amount?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, yeah, they would establish the fee themselves.
Thank you.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble. And I looked around to see if anybody from the Minneapolis Park Board was here, and I don't see anybody. On page 57, under the local government, do you know if they qualify under that? They are an elected body, their own elected body. Minneapolis is a home rule charter city, but I don't know if they're an instrumentality, and they do purchase those vehicles, and so I don't know if they would qualify. Oh. So,
Mr. Chair.
Devil.
Senator, it's a good catch. We always leave them out by mistake. You're right. So maybe we should get them in.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. On the, I just
members, if maybe it's only me, but I'm having a really hard time hearing.
Okay.
So if everybody could speak up a little bit, I think it would be helpful.
I'll try. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to use my outside voice. as a representative of Hennepin County, I just need to point out that it appears, I don't want to say that we're getting the short end of the straw, but you know, we aren't getting quite parity on the motor vehicle sales tax, but I at least am glad that we are getting some money back in. I note that on the motor vehicle sales tax that the metro area transit account is dropping 2%. I understand it's going to Greater Minnesota Transit account. I have heard from many cities in Greater Minnesota that want to increase transit, so I understand that. But I'm going to channel one of my House members who you've talked to before who has concerns that the metro area buses get the short shift, in especially in the inner city, and so is there any assurance in here that Metro Transit, the larger sales tax increase for Metro Area Transit, are going to use that for buses and not just other LRT type of stuff?
So Mr. Chair, Senator Dietzick. I'll first start off by saying this whole bill kind of hangs together. First of all, to your first point, I'm sympathetic on the motor vehicle lease tax, and thank you for raising that issue. On the other hand, like I said, this is balancing a lot of really valid or articulated needs and interests. On your second point, we're taking 2% away from Metro Transit out of the motor vehicle sales tax and getting that to Greater Minnesota Transit. The reason we're able to do that is to your final point, which is we support north of $300 million more dollars per year through the 3/4 cent sales tax, both the capital needs and the operating needs of transit in the metropolitan area. So they more than make up. And there is assurance in law by the uses that are spelled out in that section. Can you point that out, Ms. Berezovsky?
Mr. Chair, the
Ms. Berezovsky.
Thank you. The uses of the new sales tax proceeds, they begin at 34.29. They include operating and capital costs to preserve existing bus services, and they also refer to an average annual rate of 4% expansion of regular route and commuter bus service, and that's at 35.4 to 35.6.
Thank you.
Members, we've had a couple of comments and questions about provisions that are being dealt with in an amendment. I think we should pass the amendment out. So if we could get the A5 amendment passed out, and which would
A6.
I apologize. And Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I move the A6 amendment.
And Senator Rest moves the A6 amendment. And Senator Rest, should we have missed? Pollock, or did you want to?
I think Ms. Pollock, I would ask for her to go through it, if you will.
Ms. Pollock.
Mr. Chair and members, on the A6 amendment, line 1.3, it adds Carver and Scott County to the transit improvement area sales and use tax. And then there's a approval requirement that begins on 1.4 of the amendment, and it goes down through 1.12. And essentially, the tax is imposed on all of the seven counties in the area, now including Carver and Scott, unless at least four counties vote to opt out. If at least four vote to opt out, then those four counties do not impose the tax, but if fewer than four vote to opt out, the tax is imposed on all seven counties. Beginning on 1.13 of the amendment, this just modifies the effective date to say that this opt-out must take place before June 15 of 2015. beginning on 1.16 of the amendment, this is a provision that provides a taxing structure for trailers that are between 3,000 and 7,200 pounds. It allows one or the other taxing structure. Turning to page 2 of the amendment, beginning on 2.8, this is the effective date for the sales tax mentioned earlier on page 1. On page 2, line 10 of the amendment, this reinstates the allocation of the $3.50 of the vehicle registration renewal fee to the general fund. Line 2.11 of the amendment removes the sales tax exemption for snowplows and dump trucks for local government purchases. Page 2.13 of the amendment, and it deletes the motor vehicle sales tax refund that is no longer necessary with the removal of the sales tax exemption.
Ms. McQuaid.
And Mr. Chair and members, to go along with the changes on lines 2.10 and 2.11 of the amendment, we need to change some appropriation totals, and I'll offer on the record some of those changes and then ask that the committee allow changes in the totals up above. So on line 10.23, delete $57,400,000, both of those, and insert $57,002,000. On page 10, line 24, delete $28,700,000 and insert $28,501,000. And on page 10, line 28, delete $28,700 and insert $28,501,000. And again, we'll just ask that we are allowed to change the totals up above to correspond to those exact changes.
And so, members, we are removing the local government vehicle sales tax exemption, removing the 10-day to crash your car and get your money back provision, removing the $3.50 general fund designation of the fee, making changes to the metropolitan transit tax that would bring in two more counties but allow them a modified opt-out provision, and changes to single-axle trailers. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So responding to the motor vehicle, the metropolitan area sales tax piece, I know that Carver and Scott, we didn't include, we had included them in the first initial proposal that I introduced, included them in the amendment that was passed on by the committee because they articulated a strong desire not to be a part of that. So I guess this would probably have the same effect, allowing them an opportunity to opt out, although they have to talk to other counties, I guess, opting out or to be excluded. So I'm guessing Senator Orman will have a response to that. The trailer piece, there have been some hallway discussions. I think the committee supported a particular position. I did make
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Esten.
Senator Dibble, you need to speak louder again, please.
All right.
Senator Dibble.
All right. Thank you. I'm trying as hard as I can. If I
know.
Speak too loud, I lose my voice very quickly.
Mr.
I have this
Chairman,
like
I
congenitally soft voice.
That's
my problem.
The acoustics are not so great in here.
So I'll try to – I'll use my diaphragm to project. I was taught that in choir and band. So I understand the desire to change that – and folks should not necessarily be surprised that that's coming. On the registration renewal opportunity to, or the piece that allows the 10-day grace, that's a that's a policy choice the committee can make. You know, doesn't it's not crucial to the bill, and I understand that, you know, the debate on that subject. The committee supported that pretty strongly. I'd be interested in hearing from Senator Coonan about the motor vehicle sales tax exemption for cities. Just by way of rationale and discussion, this is that ongoing conversation we have about when we pay, you know, when we ask cities to pay, you know, are we just kind of giving with one hand and taking with the other? It's part of that larger discussion, and Senator Coonan provided a pretty good rationale, particularly as it relates to transportation, maintenance budgets, and also trying to get dollars over to municipalities for the use on their streets, yet we're making them pay sales tax or taking a little bit away as we're trying to get dollars over to them, and that's kind of the nexus. We've had other types of units of government since that time come in and ask for that same exemption, and I just said that the rationale, the policy rationale that we had around that conversation doesn't hold up in this instance. Just FYI, more coming looking for those exemptions. So it might be prudent to take it out, or, you know, everyone else is going to come like this.
Senator Dibble, from our conversation a couple of years ago, we're familiar with the local governments asking for their sales exemptions.
Yes, yeah. We did take a pretty big step for local governments on the overall sales tax a couple of years ago. I think those are all the pieces. Oh, and then, yeah, that little piece, that $350. From that's such a small amount that doesn't make a big difference to what we're trying to do on behalf of local roads, so that makes sense to take out.
Questions, members? Senator Armin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, did you pass out a spreadsheet for your bill?
Senator Dibble.
Well,
Senator Armin, I think we have the revenue estimate in front of us.
That's fine.
Senator Armin, I understand there are spreadsheets available if it would be helpful.
I think the members would
Let's
appreciate
get
having the spreadsheet.
Staff to pass the spreadsheets out.
Because, Mr. Chair, I was hoping
Senator Armin.
That Ms. Berezovsky or Senator Dibble could point out the line items on the spreadsheet that are affected by the amendment, because I think it would really help us to see the overall picture of the changes being proposed here.
So, Mr. Chair, we both on. I think that can be illustrated both on the revenue note or on
Mr.
the
Chairman.
Spreadsheet. The revenue portion of the spreadsheet is towards the back, starting at line 388. That box has revenue items. I'll have maybe Ms. Boyd help us out.
1 second, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I guess. That's fine, but I would be more interested in what changes there are on the revenue estimate. And either Ms. Boyd or Ms. McQuay could tell us that as well. I mean, that this is, as a member of the Tax Committee, this is a far more meaningful document to me than as a Transportation Committee member, the spreadsheet is in terms of the expenditures. But if we could have either pointed out on both documents, that would certainly help me. If it was pointed out on the revenue estimate, what gains there are or whatever on the revenue estimate.
Well, perhaps Senator Rasmus Boyd would walk through the spreadsheet and Ms. McQuay will walk through the revenue estimate. That would be closer to their
documents. That only the items that are affected by the amendment.
Only the items. Okay. Ms. Boyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members. If we look at the amendment, on the back page of the amendment, the changes starting on line 210. 210 and 211 relate to that 350 piece of the existing filing fee. That revenue can be found on page 11 of the spreadsheet. On lines 415 and 416, you'll see the shift of $398,000 approximately a year from the general fund to the special revenue fund that goes to the city streets and bridges accounts.
Mr. Could she repeat that?
Senator,
she was going too quickly.
Ms. Boyd, could you repeat that, please?
Yes. Lines 210 and 211 of the amendment relating to the filing fee can be found on lines 415 and 416 of the spreadsheet on page 11. of the spreadsheet?
Ready, Shelby? Shelby, you ready?
Line, Mr. Chair and Senator Sundrum, lines 415 and 416. I see he's still searching for it. And again, that those totals come to 398,000 shift a year. Mr. Chair, I'll move on unless there are more questions. The next pieces, the next two lines, 212 and 213 on the amendment, deal with the local government exemptions for motor vehicle sales tax. Those are in three pieces. And the revenues, one is on line 396 of the spreadsheet on page 10, and that is showing the revenue change for the highway user tax distribution fund of $1.2 million a year. That is double in the fiscal year 2016 column under the Senate, since there that is made retroactive to 2015. Line 410 of the spreadsheet shows the revenue change for Greater Minnesota Transit for that same provision.
And how much?
Oh, I'm sorry. And that difference on the spreadsheet is $80,000 per year. Is that right? And then the third piece is on the next page, page 11 of the spreadsheet on line 423. And that shows the difference in revenue for Metropolitan Council for the Metro Transit account for motor vehicle sales tax. And that is a difference of $720,000 per year. I believe Ms. McCoy will point this out, but these are slightly different totals on the revenue sheet as they were calculated using interactions with other provisions in the bill, I believe, and Ms. the spreadsheet was
McCoy,
against current law.
Maybe would you just move to the revenue estimate and point them out? Are you familiar
yes.
with them? Ms. Boyd.
On the revenue estimate, on the second set of numbers for the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, you can see the change to local government vehicle exemption. Those are the same as on the spreadsheet, except they show increases in starting in 17 and on a difference of $1.2 million a year to the highway user tax. Again, the last line in the Greater Minnesota Transit Account section of the revenue estimate shows a difference of $200,000 a year to the Greater Minnesota Transit piece of motor vehicle sales tax allocations. And the last line for the Metropolitan Area Transit account for motor vehicle sales tax shows a difference of $600,000 a year, and that's from the local government vehicle exemption.
Any more questions on the A6 members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hartman.
Is the state affected in any way, or the Metropolitan Council, any of these funds affected by the first portion of the amendment relating to Carver and Scott counties?
So,
Senator Devil.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, I don't quite understand the question. Potentially, a very small amount, but a little bit more money, of course, would be raised. Through the sales tax, the 0.75 cent sales tax. Of course, that means that those transit services then would be provided through the Metropolitan Council to those counties. And, of course, the pressure on the general fund at the state level would be just that much less.
Mr. Chair, what you're proposing, I believe, Senator Dibble and Senator Rest, is to take tax revenues from raised in Carver and Scott County to fund Met Council and seven county metro transit projects. Is that your intention?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, it's the Rest Amendment, but that would not be my intention should this amendment go on. Certainly, if the dollars are raised from Carver, from taxpayers in Carver and Scott County, they absolutely should receive corresponding service.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, was this language heard in your committee?
Senator Dibble.
The language of this amendment, Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman?
Relating to the Carver and Scott County adjusted opt-in language?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, it was not. I mean, the subject of Carver and Scott came up. Of course, Senator Pratt is on our committee. He was very happy when we took Carver and Scott out. So, I mean, the subject has come up in terms of this specific language. No, it has not been heard in my
committee. Well, and Mr. Chair, my concern is that folks from those communities were not at the table to be heard with their concerns about this proposal. And I would hope members of this committee would not address that in an amendment without having heard from all the residents being affected by this amendment. We've had this conversation before, and when the CTIB was originally passed, members, Carver and Scott opted out and said they did not want to participate. That is still their positions. They do not want to participate in this local government organization that raises taxes and develops transit projects. And I would ask you to consider if this is what a precedent that you think would be a good one, that you would require counties to participate by force in a local government joint effort without their support. And certainly it would be good if the revenues from Carver and Scott County were added in. We could fund a whole lot more transportation projects in those areas, but the plans that have been adopted by that CTIB organization doesn't include any projects for Scott and Carver County, so they haven't really seen it to be in their best interest to participate. And so while this is a modified opt-out, it still would require Carver and Scott County to get two other counties in that five-county area that benefit from this program to allow them to not participate. I think that sets a terrible precedent for the Senate, not just because they're being forced to participate or have the potential to be forced to participate, but also that we would impose this on these counties and these residents without ever hearing from them. And I think we owe it to them to have an opportunity to be heard on a proposal that so much affects them.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Orban, I very much respect the points you've just made. I will point out there is this opt-out provision. It occurs to me as I sit here that there would be the opportunity. So, of course, four counties would need to come together to opt out. What I would very easily imagine is that those four counties would come together quite quickly to have a conversation, to form a negotiation with all seven counties to create some conditions, standards, considerations for their willingness to opt in. We know that there's been a lot of discussion about CTIB and the Met Council and how resources are raised and allocated with respect to transit service and how that's done on a geographic basis. And it could potentially very much strengthen the hand of the four counties, you know, Scott, Carver, Washington, and Anoka, too, you know, to create some stronger enforceable understandings about how resources, if they're raised and unified on a seven-county basis, would be utilized.
Sure. Senator Orban.
You know, I might have been willing to support a renewed opt-out so that if you had wanted to ask these counties again whether they wanted to participate or not, given some of the new proposals for transit projects, and then our county residents could have weighed in, could have come to the legislature and testified, could have participated in this process. But that's not what's being proposed here. And so I oppose this. I wish we'd had a much broader conversation about it. I think we still could. But it's not right to do this without including the residents of these communities or their elected officials in hearing this proposal. And so for that reason, members, I would ask that I would move that we amend the A6 amendment to delete lines 1.3 through
6.14. And I would ask members to really think about this. Would you want the residents of your communities to be forced into a joint government local option sales tax if they didn't know about it, weren't at the table to discuss it, couldn't propose any amendments or adjustments, and was being included essentially with the force of government? This is not a good precedent for our Senate, and I would ask members to please assist in taking this provision out. It can be considered later. And as I said, I think the residents of my communities and Scott County would be willing to have this conversation again if they were asked to renew their opt-out with the same proposal that we considered when the CTIB was originally created.
Senator Rust.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask members to vote against Senator Ortman's amendment to the amendment. I think Senator Dibble has really explained how there could be a conversation, and there ought to be a conversation between whatever counties might see fit to at this point to opt out and perhaps have a great deal of leverage with the three counties that opt in about what level of their participation would be appropriate. And I think the language 1.3 through 1.14 is an opportune way for particularly Carver and Scott to have a great deal of say-so in how this transit tax is implemented, how it is, how it affects projects, et cetera. And I would ask you to vote against the Ortman Amendment.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're in the Tax Committee. The residents of my community had no notice. There was no bill. There was no hearing on this in the Transportation Committee where they would have known to watch for this. In fact, we were all expecting this and would have come to participate, but it wasn't included in any hearing here at the Capitol. This proposal has never been heard, and so it wasn't even in the bill as it moved from Transportation to Tax Committee, and so they wouldn't have known to come today. We couldn't call folks to come and testify to explain to you why they would be opposed to this proposal. And so instead, we're seeing an amendment in the Tax Committee. We've completely excluded folks that will be affected by these provisions. And so I ask you, would you want this for members of your community? And so I ask you to please remove this language. It can be taken up at a later time, but not with this process. This is disrespectful to all the residents that care about the issues that are happening here at the Capitol and all the impacts that it will have on their families and their businesses in my communities and in Scott County.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I look at that, this is not my area, but I think about Senator Rest's comment about this as an opportunity for Scott and Carver, and I'm not exactly sure that that's how they would perceive this. But I do have a question for anybody on the panel up there related to projects in Scott and Carver for the transit improvement area. Are there projects already going of any significance? And then are there, what kind of projects are there in Washington and I believe it was Hennepin County? And the reason why I ask that is if Washington and Hennepin already have projects going, I don't see them building an alliance with two that have no projects. But I just want your comments on that.
Senator Gazelle, comment. Turn to the author of the amendment, Senator Rest.
Senator Gazelka, Mr. Chairman, this is a pay-to-play plan. If you are a participant, then there are projects that are funded in your community. So at this point, as I understand the program, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, they wouldn't be, but if they are in it, then there would be funds that would be directed toward projects in their in the respective four counties. Let's say four counties opt out. Well, then they don't pay and they don't get projects. That's the way it is operated, is my understanding, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble. You can correct me if I'm misspoken.
Senator Debo.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest is correct. I will just add that both Carver and Scott County do have ex officio seats at the county's Transit Improvement Board table. They send their delegates. They're active participants in the conversation. Well, I'll leave it at that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Just on that point, Mr. Chair, when the CTIB was originally passed, Carver and Scott, like the other counties, all had to opt in, and Carver and Scott respectfully opted out because the proposals at that time did not include any projects in the long term for their communities. And so, obviously, they said, no, this is not a good investment for Carver and Scott counties. To their credit, they have been at the table. They, as Senator Dibble has said, why would you, if you're having this conversation, try and include them by force against their will? These are very good elected officials that are doing their best to serve the county, and they should be heard about whether or not they think this is a good plan for Carver County going forward. And so, as I said before, if this had been a renewed opt-in, as we had with the CTIB in its initiation, we would be having a very different conversation here. I would be supportive of that. But that's not what's being proposed here. And they are due so much more from the Minnesota Senate. And to have an amendment like this at the very last minute with no opportunity to be heard and no background for members in this committee.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my question has to go to the representation. I thought I heard Senator Dibble say that these counties would have ex officio or do have ex officio status, but I believe that means they can't vote. And so what I want to know is, can the other counties vote on these issues? And if so, then would this not be adding these two new counties with taxation, but without giving them representation because they can't vote? Is that a correct understanding?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, they're ex officio because they're included in the conversations, but since they are not collecting the tax at this point, they're not included. If they were collecting the tax, they automatically become voting members of the CTIP.
That answers my question. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else, members?
Mr. Chair, and I'll just be brief. I don't think we ought to be doing this. You just don't bring two counties into a plan without testimony from them. If this was Olmsted County, I'd be right down the length and breadth of this microphone. You just don't do this to people this abruptly. I think minimally we ought to wait for this amendment until we hear testimony from those counties.
Senator Thompson.
I don't have anything to add to what Senator Ortman said, but I agree with the position. This has not been handled in a way that is fair to those who are being impacted by it.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, again, I would ask people to oppose the Ortman amendment to the A6.
Senator Ortman moves an amendment to the A6 amendment. Seeing no more conversation, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chairman, then I would renew my motion for the A6.
Senator Coonan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, of course, since I was the author of the bill for the motor vehicle sales tax exemption for local units of government, that's what I wanted to talk about, that this amendment removes that language. In my opinion, this is good policy, and also this bill makes a lot of effort at providing funding for local units of government for transportation. And so I'm curious, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, what's the reasoning behind wanting to remove this language for this exemption?
Senator Rest.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Coonan. In reviewing the bill, it seemed to me that we really should be extremely cautious about reducing at any point, since the needs are so great, the funds going to the highway user funds, and this is it's a significant hit. $3.6 million, I think it is, and that this is not the time to be doing that, and that maybe next year or the year after, once we have really truly established the ongoing revenues from sustainable funds, if this bill passes, that we could reconsider that. It's not that it's totally off the table, but it's not something we should be doing this year, with all due respect.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for that explanation, Senator Rest. And I understand what you're saying. This is a fair amount of money, but the way I've been looking at this is this bill also, it, you know, comes up with quite a bit of new funding, and so the way I see it, they should be moving together. Of course, if something, and I hope this doesn't, but if something happens and we don't get a transportation bill, then, of course, I would agree that we shouldn't be doing this exemption at this time. But thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest.
Anything else, members? Senator Dibble.
At the risk of belaboring this conversation, I apologize. I'm getting in the middle of an amendment. But a side conversation we had, a different conversation we had in Senator Rest, and Senator Senjum are familiar with Senator Westrom's proposal that ended up getting taken out of the bill. But it's similar, and that's sales tax that's paid by the Department of Transportation and its contractors on construction materials. It's a similar kind of conversation. We need to have this larger conversation about asking the highway user fund to support the general fund in reverse and that sort of thing. This is part of that larger conversation that we need to get back to.
We have a technical amendment. Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and members, just a small technical change. On line 1.13 of the amendment, it should say page 36, line 13. And on page 36, line 12 of the amendment, add, after Ramsey, comma, add Carver, comma, Scott, comma.
And Ms. Pollack, can we incorporate that?
I will incorporate those changes into the A6.
Senator Rest incorporates those changes into the A6. Senator Artman.
Mr. Chair, can you repeat those again, please? Council, repeat them.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, on line 1.13 of the amendment, it should say page 36, line 13. And then on page 36.12 of the bill, after Ramsey, comma, insert Carver, comma, Scott, comma.
Senator Rest renews her motion that the A6 pass. We do need to give Ms. McQuay and the staff opportunity to make necessary total and subtotal changes to conform to the A6 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
The motion prevails. Members, we are going to move to testimony, and I need to move on for a while.
Chair.
So Senator Rest is going to be chairing.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I had some questions, and I was asked to wait on the questions regarding the bill and of council.
And Senator Ortman, you may proceed, and then we'll go to testimony.
Thank you. I looked at the spreadsheet, and it's changed. But I just wanted to confirm a couple of things here. Can you confirm, Senator Dibble, how much in new revenue your revised bill will raise?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Ortman.
Senator Dibble.
Yes, with Ms. Boyd's help, I can. if you look at the total revenues by fund section towards the back, starts on page 11.
Okay.
Madam Chair and Senators, yeah, on page 11 of the spreadsheet on the last line, under the Senate section, biennium fiscal year 16-17, there's a total of $1.85 billion, roughly, that was adjusted in the amendment only by $800,000, a decrease of $800,000 from that amount. Oh, actually, I'm sorry, I amend that answer. That's not true, because that was just a shift between funds. So that number is correct.
So, Madam Chair, the bill in the tax committee today raises $1.8 billion in new revenues through new and tax adjustments. And I'm wondering if council could advise our committee administrator and confirm that the $1.8 billion is new spending that will be permanent new spending. Can you confirm that?
Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, most of that is new. We do have some one-time general fund appropriations. I can't remember what that total is.
Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, that's my question. I saw that there was $10 million taken out of the general fund from the motor vehicle lease tax, I think it was. But other than that, they're all permanent spending changes, are they not?
Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman. No, not all of the new spending is permanent. We have to adjust back some of the general fund spending that we do, because we need to get those dollars back over to the Metropolitan Metro Council for the purpose of supporting necessary dollars for metro mobility. So in some instances, some of the dollars that we appropriate out of the general fund are one time, and then they go back, shift back to the base in the Metropolitan Council for existing service, because, you know, metro mobility is growing because we're all getting older.
Other questions, Senator Ortman?
Madam Chair, I would ask that you provide an estimate of what the permanent spending changes are versus the one-time allocation. I think that's a fair question. And I also wanted to ask, Madam Chair.
Certainly. Senator Ortman.
Multiple questions here. The gas tax, the 6.5 cents, it is adjustable, right? It will inflate over time if the wholesale gas increases.
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, it could conceivably go down, to the floor of $2.50, or go up. But it is similar to how we currently construe sales tax and other sorts of goods. It responds to the price.
Well, and Madam Chair, Madam Chair,
Senator Ortman,
Senator Dibble, is that a new tax? I don't think that's currently the way we collect gas taxes. So this is on a new transaction, right, at the wholesale level, where our current gas tax is applied at the retail level. Am I understanding it correctly?
Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked it, because it gives me the opportunity to respond. The answer to your question is no. The gas tax, as it's currently collected, is at the same time, in the same place as this proposed The only essential difference in what we call the gross receipts tax, really a sales tax on the price of gas at the wholesale level, is how it's calculated. It's on the price. But in every other respect and fashion, it's identical.
Well,
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, the current gas tax is paid by the purchaser at the pump, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, no. It's paid by the distributor at the wholesale level.
Okay.
It's passed through, absolutely. So
right.
To your point, that's correct,
right.
as this will be as well.
I just wanted to make sure there wasn't going to be some narrative that somehow the oil and gas companies were going to pay this 6.5 cents, because they do get passed along to the consumer, and there's no expectation otherwise, right, Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Senator Ortman, there is no expectation otherwise, nor is there a requirement to do so, but that would typically be what happens.
Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
when I looked at the spreadsheet from before, there was a whole list of new taxes on page 11 spreadsheet. We just wanted to. So pages 10 and 11. Lines 390. Through 438, are they all new provisions, Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, most of these lines are new provisions. Some, however, are show how some of the revenues then flow or get distributed out. If you like, we can go through each one quickly. I don't know if you want to take the time for that to understand it. For example, the So the like line 398 through 401, that just shows how those dollars flow out of the highway user tax distribution fund to the various buckets, the trunk highway fund, the county state aid highway, municipal state aid. Of course, we also have the 5% set aside. Likewise, with the motor vehicle lease tax, how those get, you know, that's one tax, obviously, but it gets distributed in different ways, and we bring in $10 million from the general fund and only divert $22 million going forward in the future. So the big items are the gross receipts tax, the changes to the vehicle registration tax, the late payment for failure to pay for your tabs, $25 a month. Then, of course, the getting myself in a little bit too deep here. Do we want to just enumerate quickly or help Senator Ortman understand?
Senator Ortman, do you want him to go through every line?
We're in 18. The tax committee. These are all new taxing provisions, and I think it makes sense for us to do our work, even if they don't do it in the Transportation Committee.
Senator Ortman,
Madam Chair,
it seems to me
we absolutely do our work in the Transportation Committee.
Mr.
I don't know why.
Madam Chair, didn't even hear this provision in the Transportation Committee. So I'd like to hear about the new revenues in your bill in the Tax Committee, if I may.
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, what didn't
second,
we hear?
Just a second, Senator Dibble. Senator Ortman, I mean, we can do that. It seems to me that it's really clear where the new taxes and new revenues are being raised on the revenue estimate. And, you know, maybe we could go through those as well. But, I mean, that's the document I'm going to continue to look at, not the ins and outs of the funds. But Senator Dibble, did you have a response about the the work of the Transportation Committee, or should we just let it go?
I'll let Senator Ortman review the tapes, and she can understand how thoroughly we do our work.
Madam Chair, we have a $1.8 billion tax increase on Minnesotans, and I would appreciate if we could go through the lines and see how much these provisions raise in revenue. Because we haven't done that part yet. We've talked about what the provisions are, but we have not talked about how much they raise in revenue.
And Senator Ortman, some as I understand it, and I certainly can stand to be corrected, there are tax increases and there are fee increases, and I don't think we characterize like the registration fee as anything other than a tax, but some of these other things that are raising money, like surcharges, are not in the same category. Senator Dibble, would that be your understanding too, or do I have that wrong?
Well, there are technical, Madam Chair, there are technical definitions of what are fees and what are taxes, and we have that discussion all the time. Suffice it to say, though, to be sure, you know, a couple of the fees that are raised, you know, on these vehicle transaction matters, these, you know, the $10 on the vehicle registration renewal and the title transfer, go, you know, their fees on those transactions, and then they're deposited in these two funds that we create for the purpose of supporting roadway efforts at the municipal level. They're called fees or surcharges. They're used for transportation purpose, tax in the eye of some beholders, fees, surcharges in the eyes of others. So, Madam Chair, do we just want to go quickly through the revenue items?
Yeah, you can. I think maybe it's useful to go through the revenue raisers, but I don't know that it's helpful to go to how each single one of those is distributed into a dozen areas. Would that be amenable, Senator Ordman? So it's where it's raised, not where it goes.
Very
and
good.
I think that's a much shorter list.
All right.
So
ask Ms. Boyd to do that.
Where
for me.
It's raised, or okay. How much is raised on what, but you don't need to tell us how it's distributed at this point. Ms. Boyd.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, if we start on page at the bottom of page 10 under revenue items, a great many of these are reallocations of existing taxes. There is no tax increase, for instance, in motor vehicle leasing or motor vehicle sales tax. The revenue raisers start on line 391 for the gross receipts tax. That is a new tax. And the revenues are estimated at $787 million, for the biennium. and that, of course, is a motor fuels gross receipts tax. Line 392 of the revenue items, this is an existing tax on vehicle registration, but, of course, there are changes to the tax structure, and those changes are estimated to bring in an additional $191.6 million for the biennium. The next line on 393 is a new tax requiring a late payment or a late payment penalty for registration tax. And that is estimated to bring in $4.1 million for the biennium. And that amount is deposited in the Highway User Tax Fund. line 395 is a new provision allowing a grace period of 10 days to get a refund of registration tax paid. And that is actually a decrease to revenue for the Highway User Tax Fund of $95,000 for the biennium.
Did we delete that?
Oh, I apologize. That was in the amendment, and we did delete that already. So that revenue change is now gone. There's also a change on line 397. That's just a change in when the plates are required and for what entities. So that's a small revenue change to the Highway User Tax Fund of an existing tax, or I should say an existing fee, a plate fee. Of $70,000 a year. The rest of these on this page are transfers between funds and reallocations of existing taxes, like I mentioned, motor vehicle lease tax and motor vehicle sales tax is just being reallocated between existing accounts and funds. And on page 11 of the spreadsheet, I'll just point out the new pieces. Lines 413 and 414 of the spreadsheet are new $10 surcharges. One is on vehicle transaction filing fees, registration renewal transactions. So that's a new $10 surcharge on an existing fee. And the next line is a new $10 surcharge on motor vehicle title transfer fee. And those revenues on both those lines, the first surcharge brings in $90 million for the biennium, and that is deposited in a special revenue account for cities. And the next is estimated at $24 million for the biennium, and that likewise goes to city accounts.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ortman.
A question about those two, the vehicle transaction filing fee surcharge and the motor vehicle title transfer surcharge. Do they both relate to the purchase or sale of a car, a vehicle?
Senator Dibble?
Yes. The transfer in ownership, Madam Chair. So short answer is yes.
Senator Ordman, do you want Ms. Boyd to continue?
One quick question about that. So the state will raise, if I read the spreadsheet correctly, the state will raise $57 million more in 2016 on vehicle transfers?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, that's correct.
In addition to what they currently raise?
In addition, yes, these are new, Madam Chair, these are new,
new revenues
over and above.
That's what
these
you
are
asked for.
Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair, I'm just trying to understand
Senator Ortman,
who's going to be paying them. What are the current annual revenues, if you could tell me, maybe you don't have that number now, but could you tell me the current annual revenues raised with the transaction, with these vehicle purchases and sales?
Madam Chair and Senator Ortman, well, these are new surcharges, so this is there's no revenue to compare it to, but the fees that the surcharges are connected to, I'm sorry, I don't have that amount in front of me, but I can certainly get that for you in the committee.
I would appreciate that when you can. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any further revenue issues?
Yes.
Revenue raisers?
Madam Chair and committee, yes, lines 415 and 416 is a reallocation, and we removed that. Line 418 is the railroad assessment that was discussed. That was a governor's rec as well. And that raises $65 million in the biennium, and that's new revenue. Line 421 of the spreadsheet is the new 0.75% Metro Transit sales tax. That, of course, may change with the amendment that was put on a minute ago, but as of right now, the revenue estimate is $599.3 million for the biennium. And that are essentially the new revenues. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Boyd. Further discussion of whatever it is. House File.
House File 4.
House File 4. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On line 418, the railroad assessment, the $65 million, what assurances are there that that will go to rail safety and not just to the general fund? Or, I mean, not to just any other fund. How do we know that those new revenues will actually impact rail safety?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, if you look on page 87, section 19, that's where that proposal is found. And so you can see how that, to whom the assessment is assessed. The Class 1 railroads and rail carriers and in equal proportion based on route miles, et cetera. And then the assessments must be deposited in the rail grade crossing safety improvement account created in the special revenue fund. And for the purposes you see below, construction of highway rail grade crossing improvements and other selected routes include upgrades to existing protection systems, closing of crossings, necessary road work, et cetera. Additionally, the governor's initiative to establish a rail safety office of $1.4 million is established.
Senator Nelson?
Madam Chair, so I think I heard you say that part of the proceeds will be to establish a new office.
Yes.
And then the second question was, how do we know what those needs are? I mean, has there been a thorough needs assessment done? We all want safety for our rail lines and all the citizens who are impacted by that. But I guess my question is, how was this number arrived? I don't sit on the Transportation Committee. Was there a thorough analysis done of all the rail in our state and what needed upgrades needed to be done?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Senator Nelson, and before Senator Dibble answers, I can just say an emphatic yes. There's been extensive analysis done by the governor, done by Senator Dibble himself. But if you want to elaborate on that, go right ahead, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Nelson, last year when we passed some of the railroad safety policy initiatives, part of what we did was we gave direction to the Department of Transportation, Pollution Control, and Public Safety to undertake that very analysis, and they've done so and turned in a report that identifies all of the railroad routes and all of the potential hazards and you know, and an analysis of all the crossings and established a priority list of crossings that need upgrades of different types, whether they're at grade or grade separated. So that work is well in hand. It continues because you always have to go back and refine and update these sorts of things. If it would be useful, I can send that report to you.
I'd like to see that report.
All right, very good. I'll make sure that happens.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I want to follow up on the topic that was just addressed by Senator Nelson. And I've done a little bit of work on this. And I would point out that, you know, this is a tax that is going to be ongoing. And yet one would presume that the needs for improvements would change over time. I guess, Senator Dibble, one of my concerns about this is, according to the information I have seen, less than 1% of train derailments are actually at crossings. And the folks that I've talked to in the railroad business actually fear that this will take funds away from repairing track and doing other things that may not necessarily be associated with a crossing, and that it may actually be damaging. And my understanding is that the estimate for doing all of the repairs necessary to get things up to speed would be about $250 million. And by the way, $500 million is being spent this year by the railroads on those improvements. So I just think that, again, as Senator Nelson pointed out, we all want trains to be safe and make sure that our rail transit is safe. That being said, I fear that this doesn't really get to the problem. And in light of that, Madam Chair, if this is the right time, I'd like to move the A4 amendment.
Certainly. Senator Thompson moves the A4. If that could be distributed, please.
And if I may describe it as it's being distributed?
Sure.
It's very simple. It simply
delete section 19.
Deletes Section 19.
That
you
could have
starts,
done that orally, Senator Thompson.
Yeah, I
but
know.
Thank you for putting it in writing.
That starts on page 87 and finishes in a few lines on the top of page 88. It seems to me that this is an ongoing tax that isn't necessary and, frankly, is directed to a problem that may not be the problem as it pertains to derailment. So I would respectfully ask the members to support this, and I'd ask for a roll call, please.
There'll be a roll call. Discussion of the A4 amendment. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question was going to be related to this anyway, and so I rise in support of the amendment. But we're going to put over $60 million per biennium in this fund. And as I think about what happened yesterday with the firefighters fund that we consistently raid, Senator Dibble, what assurance can you give me that we're not going to raid this fund? Because as we look at what it's for, I can see a big chunk of money building up in this fund and it not really doing what we wanted to do in the first place.
Senator Dietzig.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had raised my hand earlier to follow up on what Senator Nelson's question was, and then it's relative to this amendment. So I'll say, first of all, some of these at-grade crossings that need to be done aren't just for safety purposes. There are safety purposes, but Moorhead comes to a complete standstill at times because there are I believe there's like four intersections where there's so much traffic coming in from North Dakota that they just block literally the roads in those communities. And so we do need some grade separation because the traffic is at a standstill, and it is a safety initiative for the communities because their first responders can't get to the other side. And Coon Rapids, Andover, up in Senator Kiffmeyer's area, there was actually a fire where the first responders were sitting at the railroad because the trains were either moving or stopped, you know, temporarily, and the fire department, luckily, they had a joint powers agreement with the neighboring city because the neighboring city had to come into their city to put out the fire. So this isn't just a I mean, it's a safety issue for the railroads, and we need the safety, but there's also need some grade separation because it is some communities are coming to just a standstill. One thing that is not addressed in this area, and this is mostly my understanding, is mostly for at-grade crossings, and I agree they do need some rail improvements along the rails. City of Minneapolis has 41 railroad bridges, and 36 of them at least are in my district, and you know, it doesn't discuss those. Some of those are built in 1905, and so there are more safety concerns. I've had many discussions with the railroads on the status and condition of some of those bridges, and so we do have concerns, and it is a big industry in my district. We do not, you know, want them. I mean, they have jobs in my district. It is a big area, and so we, you know, several of us are, you know, we've grown up with the railroads there, and so we're used to them being there, but there are issues that need to be addressed. And so I appreciate that the money is just going to a certain area, and it maybe could be expanded over the years of other areas, because I do believe that along the track is where, not just at the crossings, but along the track is where some of the improvement needs to be made, and then we also need to look at the bridges. But it isn't just for the safety of the railroad, but also the communities are at a complete standstill in some places.
Further discussion of the Thompson Amendment. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did have that question I asked him is I want some assurance that this, at least from the author, that he won't raid the fund. So a few years down the road, when he and I maybe are still here, I'll get up and say, hey, you promised me you wouldn't raid that fund. So, Senator Dibble, I want to know what kind of assurance I can have.
Senator Dibble, do you want to give assurances to Senator Gazelka?
Madam
about
Chair,
the unknowable future?
I will under oath assure Senator Gazelka that I will not participate ever in raiding this fund in any form or fashion. I think my record speaks well. I'm pretty cranky about other funds having been raided around here numerous times in years past by members of either party, and I speak publicly against that. I would say that two things very quickly, Madam Chair. I would oppose the Thompson Amendment. You're shocked, I'm sure. I think it is it's a completely useful and fair and valid discussion about how these resources are deployed, whether at crossings or in between crossings along stretches. I think it's pretty important, though, that these dollars be raised and be directed in the public's interests. I know the railroads are doing a lot of capital improvements, but sometimes they do them kind of in a vacuum without any larger conversation or interaction with the public or public leaders, and that gets frustrating. I think that we know that there's a great deal of attention and concern. We know that recent analysis shows that 300 and some thousand people in Minnesota live along railroad lines that carry Bakken crude within what's considered the half-mile impact zone in the case of a disaster. I think that, actually, Senator Gazelka, will help keep us honest on these dollars because folks are pretty focused on the safety issues primarily. And again, we can have this conversation about where best to deploy those resources to improve safety. I also think it's important to fund the office because something that everyone agrees is that this conversation that doesn't seem to be occurring in real time with state leaders, with local leaders, with the public needs to happen, and this office can facilitate a lot of that so we won't have these crystal connector types of things blow up on us. No pun intended.
Okay. Senator Ortman.
Thank you. Madam Chair, before we vote, is it appropriate to ask if there are folks who'd like to testify on this amendment?
We're going to have a half an hour of testimony from people who oppose provisions in the bill. If this amendment is successful, then people who have opposed it won't need to testify. If it's not successful, they'll certainly be welcome to testify.
Madam Chair, I was hoping that if there were folks in favor or could answer some of the questions that have been raised about this issue, that they might be able to inform the committee before we vote.
Senator Scoy had made it public that we'll be taking testimony from people who oppose the bill and not on amendments, just as we did not on the A6.
Madam Chair?
Consistent policy. Senator Thompson.
In light of Senator Ortman's comments, I would like the members to hear from the stakeholders, the people that have an interest in this before. So I will withdraw the A4 amendment for now, and I would ask the chair the opportunity to move it again later in the proceeding.
That would be fine. So the A4 has been withdrawn. Further questions of Senator Dibble before we get to testimony. Senator Ortman.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, in Article 6, there's a $10 surcharge on an existing $10 fee on vehicle registration and title transfers. And the summary says that it's dedicated to the Environmental Fund. Is that a new dedication?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, no, that's an existing dedication to the Environmental Fund.
So will the additional, Madam Chair, will the additional $10 surcharge also go to the Environmental Fund?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, no, that would go to the small city streets and bridges account and the larger city streets and bridges account.
Okay. And one more question,
Senator
about that.
Ortman.
Senator Dibble, is the dedication of the original fee, is it constitutional or is it just a statutory dedication?
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, it's statutory.
We will now proceed to testimony. Again, we are limiting it to a half an hour, and we only want to hear from people who oppose the bill. We do not want to hear from people who support any of its provisions. And do we have a list? And we will be having a. We will be keeping time. It's now about 22 after, so we'll take a half an hour. And we ask people who are on this list to be respectful of other people who want to testify. And they are in order. If you would come forward three at a time, Mr. Bentley Graves, Mr. Stephen Rush, and Jamie Fuel. And then after that, Mr. Ogren and Mr. Sweeney. So the first three, and again, please be respectful of the other two that want to testify.
Madam Chair?
Senator Ortman.
Thank you. I'm just wondering, I don't have the benefit of seeing your list, and I'm just wondering if...
it's on the agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got so many papers open here. Is Micah on the list or either... Keith Carlson or some other representative, because I may ask that they testify about a new provision that they might be opposed to.
The opposition is allowed. We're not hearing from any supporters. The opposition is allowed 30 minutes, and if these folks get finished, we can hear from others who oppose it. So let's begin with Mr. Graves.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I will certainly keep this brief and be respectful of the committee's time. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm the Director of Healthcare and Transportation Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The comments I'm going to give today reflect both the position of the chamber and also the Minnesota Business Partnership, but again, wanted to, in respect for time, wanted to kind of consolidate.
Fine. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. We agree that a transportation system that effectively and efficiently moves people, goods, and services is important to our state's economic competitiveness. We also agree that there's a need for some additional investment in the state's transportation infrastructure. However, we believe the legislature should consider alternative funding sources rather than the tax increases in this proposal. Minnesota businesses already face very high tax and cost burdens. We have the third highest corporate tax income tax rate, second highest personal income tax rate at the top bracket, and rank in the top five for business property taxes. The proposed gross receipts tax would give Minnesota the third highest fuel tax in the country. This is a 56% increase in the fuel tax after a 42% increase in the fuel tax in 2008 and over $2 billion in other tax increases in the last 2 years. The bill provides a floor for the wholesale fuel tax, but no ceiling. The tax would increase as the gas prices rise, which means it's neither stable nor transparent. Minnesota businesses currently pay 42% of the sales tax collected in Minnesota and 39% of all motor vehicle fuel taxes. The proposed metro area sales tax increase and the gross receipts tax in the bill will increase that burden. We evaluate these tax increases in the context of the overall tax burden in Minnesota. For example, Denver may have a higher metro area sales tax, but Colorado's corporate and income tax rates are substantially lower than Minnesota's. With a nearly $2 billion surplus in the recent $2 billion tax increase, we believe the legislature should consider alternatives to raising taxes, including using some general fund dollars to supplement existing transportation revenues. This approach will capture funding from all those who use and benefit from the system but may not pay the existing taxes. We believe investments can be made without making our cost of doing business higher than it already is by imposing the tax increases in this proposal. 33 states use general fund dollars to support their state roads and bridges. Minnesota does not. Businesses view a reliable and efficient transportation system as a priority, and as a priority for the state, it should be reflected as such in the state's general fund spending. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Mr. Rush?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Steve Rush. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Holiday Companies. We're a family-owned, Bloomington-based convenience store company, and we've been doing business in the state of Minnesota for about 90 years. I'm also on the board of directors for the Minnesota Retailers Association. Holiday Companies, like the Chamber, believes that our state, its citizens, and our customers need a safe and reliable transportation system, but there has to be balance in our investment approach. Currently, a gasoline retailer like Holiday collects almost 50 cents in taxes per gallon of gas sold in Minnesota. As the average fill is 12 gallons, every time a consumer fills their tank, they are essentially paying a $6 transportation fee. That's a lot of money. Gas taxes are extremely regressive. Most of us are able to fill up our tanks without really having to think about it. But we have many folks who can't, and they literally come in the store with a $20 or a $10 bill or even a $5 bill. One of the proposed financing mechanisms, this 6.5% gross receipts tax, would add about 18 cents per gallon in taxes, or a 63% increase on top of the current 28.6 excise tax. Combined with a federal tax at 18.4 cents, a consumer would pay about $7.80 in taxes or a transportation fee every time they fill up if this bill becomes law. Looking at it another way, if we add 18 cents to the current gas tax, a consumer would pay 46.6 cents in state taxes alone. When I was driving in here, I saw that the posted price of gas was about $2.40 a gallon. Therefore, a 46.6 cents tax is about 20% of a tax on a gallon of gas. That is almost three times our state sales tax of 6.875. If you add the federal tax of 18.4 cents, we are forcing a consumer to pay 65 cents per gallon, or an effective tax rate of about 27%. Again, we do need a safe and reliable transportation system, and devoting more resources are likely very warranted. I know you have a hard job to do. However, we should look at existing available revenue to fund the more pressing needs that MnDOT is able to specifically identify. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rush. Ms. Fuel?
Madam Chair, members of the committee,
and Mr. Ogren and Mr. Sweeney can come to the witness table.
I am Jamie Poole, President of the Minnesota Grocers Association. Just as a reminder, the Minnesota Grocers Association is a trade association that's been representing the food industry for over 118 years. We have over 200 retail members with 1,100 stores statewide, as well as approximately 100 wholesale and manufacturer partners. Our member companies employ about 125,000 union and non-union Minnesotans. The food industry is the backbone of Minnesota's economy, providing one out of 20 jobs. The House File 4 includes billions of dollars in tax and fee increases, and we are deeply concerned with the overreach of these recommendations and the impact on Minnesota's basket size. I'd like to provide you a little bit of insight this morning on our industry. The average sale per customer transaction is around $31. Our average customer stops in the store 1.6 times a week. The average family of four has a weekly shopping basket size of $128. And the retail food industry typically operates on a net profit margin of around 1%. The recommendations you're talking about today will take hundreds of dollars out of Minnesota's pocketbooks with higher license tabs, higher metropolitan sales and use tax, and higher gas prices at the pump. We know from industry studies that gas prices play a significant role in how consumers feel about the economy, and there is a direct correlation to Minnesota's spending habits. Additionally, the gas tax increase will trickle down the entire food chain from farm to fork, increasing costs on transportation, creating higher food and general merchandise costs. This places additional burdens on Minnesota's families. As an industry, we care deeply about the state's transportation needs. A robust transportation infrastructure allows products and consumers to get to the marketplace, creating jobs and economic growth. We believe that seeking efficiencies and utilizing surplus funds to meet the state's needs should be the top priority. We recognize the challenges the legislature is facing as members address the state's budget surplus. Many difficult decisions have to be made to create a balanced budget that is fiscally and socially responsible and handles the pressures and needs and wants of all constituencies. Like the legislature, we face these challenges as well. With increasing costs, shrinking profit margins, we know how difficult it is to manage a bottom line. As you move forward in this process, please consider the ramifications to the entire food supply chain of Minnesota, which will ultimately put those burdens back on kitchen tables. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fuel. Mr. Ogren.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I actually have a handout related to my comments.
Paige would get the handout from Mr. Ogren, or do we already have it, Mr. Ogren?
Yes, you already have it.
It's okay. It's members would out. Look in their packets then.
I'm sorry, it's being handed out right now.
Oh, it's being handed out now. Thank you very much, Mr. Ogren. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Mark Ogren. I own Croy Oil Company, a family business located in Stillwater. We are in our 51st year in the petroleum business this year. I'm not here to comment on whether there should be any more money spent on roads and bridges. I am here, however, to tell you that the mechanism being discussed by which it would be implemented is wrong, and the size of it is absolutely absurd. The proposed 6.5% gross receipts tax would add a whopping 18 cents per gallon to the cost of fuel. There's already a mechanism in place to collect money for this, and that's through the collection of the fuel excise tax. We all know that the only reason it's being proposed this way is to attempt to hide it from the taxpayers. So those proposing it can say, this was a cost that was passed on by the wholesalers. When this was initially discussed last year, someone at the legislative level made the comment that it would be up to the wholesaler to pass it on if they so chose. Really, our average markup is a penny and a half per gallon on the wholesale level. The proposed tax is 12 times our markup. This is not some secret pot of money that was just discovered. So what you have here is a penny and a half per gallon markup and an 18 cent per gallon tax. I can assure you that this tax will be passed on to the retailer and subsequently to the consumer. The consumer will ultimately pay for this tax. If you use a funding mechanism such as this, how do you go about budgeting for projects when you have no idea how much money will be raised from year to year? What kind of forward planning is that? Furthermore, why would you have a funding mechanism in place that actually collects more money when the fuel price is at its highest? What is the rationale for that? Collect more money from the consumer when they are hurting the most? Additionally, there's a ceiling in place that would limit the amount raised. There's not a ceiling in place that would limit the amount raised, just a floor that would ensure a minimum amount is collected. Okay, so back to the 18 cents. You have this 18 cent per gallon tax, which would be added to the current 28.5 cent state excise tax and an 18.4 federal excise tax, for a total of 64.9 cents per gallon in taxes alone. An average fill-up is approximately 12 gallons. That equates to more than $7.75 in taxes alone per fill-up, $7.75. If this is implemented as proposed, the disparity in taxes between Minnesota and our neighboring states would be devastating. This discrepancy of taxes between states would cripple the business of every gas station convenience store along every one of our borders, and it will be particularly harmful to those outlets located in greater Minnesota. Minnesotans deserve transparency in the taxes they pay. If you think it is necessary to spend more money on roads and bridges, then please address it in a responsible, non-regressive manner. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ogren. Mr. Sweeney?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Just a second.
I'm Brian Sweeney with BNSF.
Just a minute.
If I have a question for Mr. Ogren, may I ask it now?
Sure. We have plenty of time.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Mr. Ogren, thank you so much for your testimony here. I am very troubled by what you said. You're saying that the 6.5 gross receipt tax translates into 18 cents per gallon to the consumer. Can you explain how that process works?
Mr. Yes, Ogren, very briefly, if you will.
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman. Yes. So what it's based on the cost of the average cost of fuel. So it's a calculation on the previous year. So it's 6.5%, and it's already been established what last year's average price was that they'd calculated on. So if implemented, it'd be 18 cents. But what I find interesting, there's a floor, but there's no ceiling. So if we're only a bomb away in the Middle East somewhere where we could go up $1 or $2 on gas. It's 6.5% of the cost. So there's no ceiling on it. There's no telling how far this could go up, but there is obviously a floor, as I said.
Madam Chair, quickly one more question on that. So tell me, if the price of gas increased $1 tomorrow, what would be the additional tax paid on this 6.5%?
So it'd be 6.5 cents.
But it's 18 cents for the consumer?
That's the increase, but it's based on what the total cost is, not the increase. So if it went up $1, it'd be a 6.5% increase or 6.5 cent increase.
So, Senator Ortman, if the based on the price of gas over the last year, the average is then, as I understand it, this proposal, then the gross receipts tax is placed on the sale of gasoline at that rate over the next, or wholesale, over the next year. And then the price of gas for the average for that year is then established. And if that price rose another dollar, it would go from 18.5 cents a gallon to, if it's another 6.5, to approximately 25 cents. Is that... if the price average price of gas rose $1 over the next year. Is that kind of a basic understanding of how it works?
That's correct, Madam Chair. Okay. And gasoline doesn't go up by like inflation. So it fluctuates tremendously.
Which is why they're using an average. It's not a daily kind of calculation. They establish something at the end of a year to then apply the gross receipts tax to.
That's right, Madam Chair.
Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct. And I'll just add for the record, I think the figure that the testifier is using is from a previous year. It's anticipated that it would be somewhere lower than that. This 18 cents has been bandied about quite
past,
a bit,
yeah.
Fairly liberally. At this point, it wouldn't be that much. That was from a previous year in which actually gas was higher. It's been lower in this most recent year.
And okay. Madam Chair.
Ms. McQuay?
I'll just point out that the revenue estimate does assume that the tax would be 16.3 cents per gallon and
for the coming year.
Certainly that would be redone every year, but that's the assumption as of right now in the revenue estimate.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification from all parties. Thank you, Mr. Ogren. Mr. Sweeney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Brian Sweeney with BNSF Railway Company in St. Paul. I'm here speaking against the proposal to tax the railroads $32 million a year for grade crossing projects, placing the full burden of these projects on the rail industry. This is unprecedented. My company does business in 28 states. We do not have anything like this in any of those states. We're unaware of such a tax in any other state in the country. Most reference was made to the MnDOT grade crossing study that was done. Many of the crossings in that study where they recommended putting in overpasses have been in the works for quite some time. In fact, last year, the Wilmer Bypass Project, which is the single most expensive item on the list at $50 million, last year MnDOT and BNSF made a joint application for a Tiger grant under an agreement under which BNSF had pledged to pay one-third of the cost, about $16 million. So these are not new projects. These were in the works long before anybody began hauling oil out of North Dakota. as was mentioned earlier, reducing grade crossing accidents is unlikely to have any measurable effect on derailments. Today, going over the last 10 years, figures from the Federal Railroad Administration, 1% of all derailments are the result of grade crossing accidents. Less than 1% of grade crossing accidents result in a derailment. Again, those are FRA statistics. Grade crossing accidents have already been reduced dramatically in recent decades. Since 1980, the number of grade crossing accidents per year has gone down more than 80% nationally, as well as in Minnesota. In fact, the acting director of the Federal Railroad Administration recently noted that 94% of grade crossing accidents are the result of driver error. So this would put the burden for paying for grade crossing improvements on the wrong party, rather than the party, the motoring public, which is responsible for the bulk, large majority of the accidents. Instead, it would put the full burden on the rail industry. Last year, interestingly enough, 53% of all grade crossing accidents occurred at crossings that are equipped with lights and gates. So this wasn't somebody just absentmindedly driving through a red light. This was somebody actually making the effort to drive around gates. The primary causes of derailments are human error, track defects, and equipment defects. This year, as was noted, the rail industry is spending more than $500 million on its infrastructure in Minnesota. That investment will help bring down derailments. These projects are replacement of track and upgrading of signal systems, as well as additional spending that's going on system-wide with a company buying new equipment. These are the investments that will affect derailments and reducing derailments. This proposal to take this enormous amount of money out of the railroad industry would draw money away from those types of investments and focus them on what is perhaps the least consequential cause of derailments, which is grade crossing accidents. A congressionally mandated study done by USDOT back in the 1970s determined that the overwhelming majority of the benefits from grade crossing improvements go to the public, not to the rail industry. It's the motoring public is crossing private property, and now what we're being told is that the private property owner is supposed to bear the cost of the infrastructure. I think it's also not understood that the state already receives about $6 or $7 million a year from the federal government for grade crossing safety projects. This typically goes into grade crossing signal systems. The arrangement is that the state pays 90% of the cost of the signal. The local road authority pays the other 10% for the installation. But following that, the railroads assume the responsibility of maintaining those signals. Over a period of about 12 or 13 years, the cost of maintenance reaches the amount of the initial investment to install the signals. So it's already a shared responsibility with grade crossing signals. What's being proposed is to shift the full burden onto the rail industry, and we think that it's just bad policy and ultimately is bad for safety in that it would draw funds away from where it would have more effect in eliminating and preventing derailments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sweeney. And Senator Thompson, I hope that you regard his testimony as testimony in favor of your amendment when we finish here.
I do, Madam Chair. And was wondering if now would be the time, since it's fresh in people's minds.
We do have a few minutes left for in the time allotted to testimony. And so I was going to ask, and I see Mr. Carlson at the table.
That's
for
fine.
Additional testimony against provisions in the bill. So it'll just be a couple of minutes more.
Thank you.
Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm appearing on request on behalf of our members, Scott and Carver County, with concerns regarding the A6 amendment, adding those two counties to the metropolitan transit district for purposes of the 3/4 cent sales tax. Do want to express our concern, has been somewhat already enumerated. Those counties currently receive limited service to the cities of Prior Lake, Shakopee, Savage, Chanhassen, and Chaska. The rest of those counties are unserved currently. One of the largest initiatives of Scott County to get a commuter carpool lane added to 169 has not found its way into the Met Council's plans, and that adds to the frustrations of those communities. Also, under current law, one of the potential transit ways, Dan Patch, is statutorily prohibited from any additional expenditures made behalf on of that that transit way. Finally, as I think many of the members know, the members of those counties, plus some additional suburban counties, have had a long time concern with the composition of the Transit Advisory Board that functions in an advisory capacity to the Metropolitan Council in the allocation of federal transit dollars, and to a significant extent guides the expenditures of state dollars within the metropolitan area. Nearly half of the composition of that organization is made up of non-elected members. Several of our, both Scott and Carver County, believe that is not in compliance with current federal law, and has, I think several of the members know, have broad concerns. So in conclusion, has, I think, has been noted in the discussion, the opt-out provision here has been identified as giving some leverage to the two counties as to whether or not this tax, on behalf of the two counties, will have to say they don't think that suffices in meeting their concerns. I will conclude with mentioning that Scott County right now is in the course of consideration of adopting the half-cent sales tax authority that they have available to them right now under current law. If they were to act on that, and then in addition this tax would be adopted, their total sales tax rate for local purposes would be 1.25%, the highest in the state, and would somewhat frustrate the county's intent. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. We do have some additional time available for opponents of provisions in the bill. Is there anyone else who would like to come forward and testify against provisions in the bill with which they are dissatisfied?
Madam Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I would, following Mr. Carlson's testimony, like to offer the A7 amendment for consideration. When you're ready.
Get the if there's people who want to testify against the bill first, there's still some time. So I just want to, and Senator Dibble, I don't see anyone, so if you'd like to return to the table. And out of courtesy, because I had delayed his offering of his amendment, I'm going to first return to Senator Thompson, Senator Ortman.
Of course, yeah.
Okay. Senator Thompson, would you like to reoffer the A4 amendment with a roll call?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. That's exactly right. A4 amendment with a roll call. Everybody
remembers. The A4 amendment is now before us. Senator Thompson.
Everybody remembers that this would delete Section 19 from page 87 of the bill and repeal the railroad tax that was just discussed by one of the testifiers.
Further discussion of the A4 amendment. Well, members, I would hope we would reject the A4 amendment. I think that there has been a great deal of study done with regard to safety, railroad safety. The railroads themselves say that their number one concern, in terms of when I've heard their public spokespeople, including Mr. Sweeney, that the first thing that comes to their mind with regard to the tracks that run through our state and across the country is safety. And so I think the governor's initiative is a valuable one, and one that we should continue to support. Senator Dibble, would you please comment in addition?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll just restate my earlier points. I would urge the committee to reject Senator Thompson's amendment for the reasons you stated. I do think that it's important to establish this office. I do think it's important to make these grade crossing safety improvements. I think that we can absolutely have an extended discussion about making improvements in between the crossings. That's an important conversation to have as well. As I said earlier, 300 and some thousand people live in highly concentrated urban areas within the impact zone of these routes that host these very volatile loads that are going through. And our communities are paying very, very close attention to this subject right now.
I know that Senator Bach just stepped out for a minute. I know he wants to vote on this amendment, so we're going to wait.
Madam Chair?
But Senator Senjum, help us out with some comments.
Madam Chair, we're all on the side of safety. There's no question about that. And it seems to me I heard from the testimony that the whole issue of safety was not so much at rail crossings, but perhaps more so on track lines, and that's really where, you know, more recently, of course, we've heard a lot about derailments and spills and explosions and fires and devastation. It seems to me that if we continue along the lines of including this provision within the bill, that we're simply distracting from rail line upgrades that the railroad, in this case, is already spending $500 million a year, and they want to continue to do that on into the future. It just seems to me if you're going to be on the side of safety, you let the railroads do what they can do best, and that's to fix their track line. And generally speaking, the crossings are pretty safe.
Well, I think we can we don't want to delay this too long, so I
vote. Yep. Mm-hmm. Senator Rest?
No.
Senator Skoye? Senator Bach? Senator Dietzick?
No.
Thank you. Senator Eaton?
No.
Senator Gazelka?
Yes.
Senator Coonan?
No.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Nelson?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Reiner?
No.
Senator Senjum?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
There being five ayes and six noes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to offer the A7 amendment.
The A7 amendment will be distributed. Thank you. Ortman, do you want to explain your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members and Senator Dibble, what this amendment does is it goes back to that CTIB language in the A6 amendment, and it would go back to that original requirement that Scott and Carver County approve by their own declaration participation in this taxing district. So, members, when it was originally formed back several years ago, asking the seven county metro areas if they wanted to participate in a taxing district to raise a quarter cent tax for transportation purposes, all of the counties were asked to consider that and take an affirmative vote. And in that case, five of the counties said yes, and two of the counties, Carver and Scott, opted no. They've been having this conversation and looking at transit projects throughout the seven county metro area for a long time. The 0.75 increase to that tax is not intended to all go to the CTIB. Most of that new money will go to the Met Council for Met Transit projects and some to that CTIB organization. Because of these big changes, all I'm asking is pass the proposal, but then go back again, subject to approval by these county boards and their participation in their elected process, and also allow the residents an opportunity, the cities an opportunity, to engage in this conversation and participate. So the A7 amendment, members, is intended to allow this to go forward as Senator Dibble and Senator Rest would want. I would just ask that we go back and ask for a vote from these counties. And Senator Dibble, I would ask for your support for this amendment.
Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, I'm not mistaken, and I think I'm right, counties of Scott and Carver can still get into the county's Transit Improvement Board under current law. I go back to my earlier points about, I think, the opportunity that this presents with the three-quarters sales tax is any four counties, not necessarily the four that I named, but I would imagine that the four counties or even five counties could very much come together in a coalition formation and create a negotiation whereby they would receive consideration that they might not otherwise receive, going to concerns that have been articulated, whether well-founded or not. I think sometimes the case is overstated by those counties, but nevertheless, people are feeling like there needs to be a stronger discussion about where resources are raised and where they're expended, and they would have that ability. I think it creates an opportunity and a path that there isn't now. So my two points are, Scott and Carver can get into the CTIB now. The opportunity that the REST proposal presents is a pretty powerful one for the new dollars.
Madam Chair,
I would oppose the amendment.
Madam Chair. Senator Deborah, I just want to be clear. So you oppose the amendment?
Madam Chair, I oppose the A7 Ortman amendment.
And as the maker of the A6, I also oppose the A7. Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, the Carver and Scott folks have been at the table for years, and they have decided not to participate. The opportunity you're looking for, Senators Dibble and Rest, for them to go back and look at what the benefits are of participation will happen with this amendment. What it will do is then give all seven counties an incentive and opportunity to look again at the taxing districts, the amount of revenues that they would raise, and the opportunities that they would have to fund projects and to work together. I think this creates the incentive, the dialogue, and the conversation that you would hope for. It just puts a protection in case Carver and Scott County decide they don't want to participate, they won't be forced to. But they will all be asked to revisit this issue with all the new revenues that would be imposed in these counties. And so I would ask members to vote with this amendment. Senators Dibble and Senator Rest will accomplish their goal, but we can also make sure that these counties have a little bit more input in the process.
Thank you, Senator Ortman. Is there further discussion on the A7 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say no.
No.
No. The motion fails. The amendment is not adopted. Is there further discussion of House File 4? Seeing none, Senator Skoy, Senator Gazelka.
One more amendment, Madam Chair. The A2.
Senator Gazelka. The which?
A2 amendment.
The A2 amendment.
And Madam Chair, just for the record, I have another amendment also.
Okay. Senator Gazelka.
Madam Chair, members, this has to do with the fee and a section related to the driving privilege license. It's a new fee of $17.25. It's found on page 78 at the beginning of it. And my concern here is this driving privilege license means a Class D licensed instruction permit or provisional license to operate a motor vehicle issued under the laws of the state by the Commissioner of Public Safety. Here's the part that gives me concern: to a person who is unable to demonstrate legal presence in this country through current law. Unable to demonstrate legal presence. And, you know, I know there's a bigger debate about illegal immigration, and we're not going to solve that here. And as we move forward, frankly, if they end up in the future on the federal level closing the borders and then dealing with those illegal immigrants that are already here, I will gladly roll up my sleeves and help, but not until then. And so this amendment basically deletes this whole section and that new fee that is part of that. And Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call on this.
It'll be a roll call. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm opposed to the Gazelka A2 amendment. This particular provision received extensive committee time both last year and this year, both as a standalone, then also as it was inserted into this particular committee report. It's received a lot of due diligence, a lot of work by Senator Champion and the committee, strongly supported by the committee. And Senator Champion has undertaken a lot of effort to compromise with folks with concerns, and think he's come up with a good package. And these are provisions I strongly support.
Senator Dibble, Senator Gazelka, as I'm trying to follow the sections, you are deleting an appropriation and then policy, which is we can offer any kind of amendments we want in this committee, but this is indeed outside the jurisdiction of the Tax Committee. Senator Skoy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I was going to mention this is outside the jurisdiction of the Tax Committee. I think we'll give Senator Gazelka a little latitude. I would urge people to not support the Gazelka amendment.
Further discussion of the Gazelka amendment? Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to add that I think the funding for this provision is likely to be needed with the costs of implementing this language, so I'm hoping that everyone will oppose the amendment.
The Secretary will take the roll on the A2 amendment.
Senator Rest?
No.
And Senator Skoy?
No.
Senator Bach?
No.
Senator Dietzek?
No.
Senator Eaton?
No.
Senator Gazelka?
Yes.
Senator Coonan?
No.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Nelson?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Reinert?
No.
Senator Senjum?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
There being 5 ayes and 8 noes, the motion fails and the amendment is not adopted. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer the A4 amendment.
Chair, we have dealt with the A4 amendment.
My apologies, Madam Chair. It's the A3 amendment.
The A3 amendment. Thank you very much for the clarification. The page will... Okay, so we're looking at page 59, section 36. Just turn to that. Section 36, this deals with the, for the members of the public who are here, this is the city parking facility fee section. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope members would delete section 36 of Article 6. This provision, according to Senator Peterson, did not have testimony in the Transportation Committee. And what it does is authorize these cities to impose parking facility fees by stall on private parking garage owners and others. There are no limits. It could be $10 a spot. It could be $100 a spot. There's no duration. There's no limit on the purposes. When I look at it, it includes recreational and entertainment uses, trash receptacles, anything that could be argued would promote enjoyment of the city. imagine if we gave all the cities in the state of Minnesota that kind of authority. I think if you give the cities this authority now, you should expect other cities to be back at the legislature looking at the same authority to impose taxes on parking spaces for any amount, any duration, for any purpose. This is a penalty for car ownership. It's a penalty for property ownership in these cities. And I hope members realize what a huge tax grab this would be and how it would hurt these businesses and parking garage and those that use these facilities. A huge imposition on the businesses in the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul that have employees that use these parking ramps and customers that use these parking ramps. This is a huge proposal that warranted much further an additional conversation in the Transportation Committee, and I hope members will take this out. I would ask for a roll call vote, Madam Chair.
There'll be a roll call, and I would just echo the comments of Senator Skoy previously about the Gazelka Amendment. Arguably, this will certainly grant Senator Ordman the latitude of offering this, but this is in general not in the jurisdiction of the Tax Committee, and therefore I would ask members to vote no. Discussion
Madam
on
Chair.
The A3 amendment. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. In all of my life experience back home and perhaps even up here, but more so back home, this goes exactly the wrong direction in terms of encouraging people to come into your downtown core area and be involved and participate in it. I know back home, you know, Mayo's got a lot of private ramps, and I know personally they literally try to keep the cost of that fee down to almost the getting their money back for the ramps, and in downtown Rochester, you know, by virtue of our business community, you know, the first hour of parking in any public ramp is free, just so you can come down, do business, and leave. But the whole emphasis is to make these ramp costs as inexpensive as possible to attract people to your downtown area. And I would just think the downtown business people in both Minneapolis and St. Paul would be almost strongly opposed to this. So I don't think we ought to do this without hearing some commentary from those communities about how they feel about this initiative. I think it's going exactly the wrong direction.
I'll call on Senator Ortman for some response, but first of all from the author of the bill, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm opposed to the A3 amendment. A couple of points. One is this provision was introduced as a bill. And then, of course, it wasn't heard separately as a bill, but included in the delete all amendment that was posted online before it was presented to a committee. It was heard twice in that capacity in committee and then again in full finance. There was testimony from the proponents, and I do understand from the city of Minneapolis, and I think the city of St. Paul, they have been in conversation with their downtown business community, who at this point do not object, and tilt in favor of this idea. To Senator Senjum's point, I think Minneapolis and St. Paul would take the opposite view. The use of these resources are designed to make their downtowns more attractive, and there's no desire to bring more cars into the central business districts of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Right now, parking in both, believe it or not, is pretty darn competitive, and there's an awful lot of it, at least in Minneapolis. I had one final point that I forgot. I'll come back to it.
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, just on the point of jurisdiction, I do think this is squarely within the jurisdiction of this committee, because what we'd be doing is authorizing certain local governments to raise revenues in their communities, and certainly at a huge cost of doing business for the business presence currently in the city, and also a cost to residents living in the city. So I do believe it's within the jurisdiction. I appreciate taking up this provision, and I hope members will vote to take this provision out.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've just thinking through this whole thing, and Senator Dibble answered part of it, my questions. But as I look at this, I think the most one of the more serious parts is that we have no limit on what they can charge, and that's already been said. But what has not been said either is particularly for the private owners, they're already paying large sums of property taxes. So this is a pass-on, but it, in effect, could reduce the amount of people that are interested in coming down to the cities, as Senator Dibble said, therefore reducing their potential income. And so on multiple levels, I support the amendment that I'm opposed to this policy.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I would draw your attention on page 59, line 14 and 19. I believe the operative word is may. Minneapolis may and St. Paul may. There's no must. Hopefully those cities would involve their residents and constituents as they're deciding this provision.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll follow up on what Senator Skoy said. If you look at line 5915, it is, at least for the city of Minneapolis, I'm sure it says the same thing on line 5919 for the city of St. Paul. It's imposed by ordinance, and so the whole ordinance process is a public process, and so for the city of Minneapolis, it'll start in the, I'm assuming, the Transportation Committee and possibly go on to the Ways and Means Committee, and so there is a whole public process set up by the city of Minneapolis. If you notice on line 5912, it is also says publicly and privately owned parking spaces, and so Minneapolis actually owns a few public parking ramps, and so I think they will be, I think they will be very cautious in what they do moving forward, because it is a fine balance in finding some additional revenue to help enhance the downtown area and make it more pedestrian-friendly and user-friendly for the people that work there. But they also, you know, so it is that balance. They don't want to overcharge to keep, move people away and scare people away, but they do need some additional revenue to help with downtown. So I will be opposing the amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, just a question. Why isn't this provision in the state and local government bill?
Senator Ortman, I don't have the bill in front of us as to which committee it was initially referred to. But as we know, there are often double kinds of jurisdiction, and things end up in one bill or another. And it, not always the clearest cut rationale is what I would offer. We've seen that on the bills that we have acted on the floor, where people have said, why is this bill here rather than somewhere else? And it's because that's where it ended up in terms of provisions in a bill. But Senator Ortman?
Was it heard in the State and Local Government Committee?
I have no idea. Senator Dibble? It was only heard in transportation. Is that correct?
I'm sure that's correct.
Yeah.
So, Madam Chair, that raises one more concern for me, because if this were an appropriate transportation fee, you would think that there would be a dedication of those fees to transportation needs in these cities, but that's not the case here. So, as I said, there are no limits for the uses here. It can be for the plazas. It can be for entertainment. It can be for park and recs. I'm really concerned that this is a provision in the transportation bill and not having been heard by the state and local government committee. And so, members, again, I hope that we would take this out, and this is a provision that should be taken up perhaps next year.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senator Rest?
No.
Senator Skoy?
No.
Senator Bach?
No.
Senator Dietzick?
No.
Senator Eaton?
No.
Senator Gazelka?
Yes.
Senator Coonan?
No.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Nelson?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Reiner?
No.
Senator Senjum?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
There being five ayes and eight noes, the motion fails and the amendment is not adopted. Are there further amendments? Seeing none, Senator Skoy moves that House File Number 4, as amended, be recommended to pass. All those in favor?
Madam Chair.
Senator Ardman.
If I could speak to the bill.
Sure. We have the Skoy motion in front of us to pass the bill. Further discussion? Senator Ardman.
Madam Chair, this bill is $1.8 billion in revenue increases to the residents of the state of Minnesota with permanent spending commitments. And I'm not sure how you think it is that Minnesotans can afford all these new taxes, especially those that are struggling at the lowest income levels. They're now going to have to pay much higher taxes for a gallon of gas. That hurts the poorest of the poor in the state of Minnesota. They're going to have to pay more to buy or sell a used car. You're imposing so much. The grocers have said they're going to have less money to pay for their groceries. Members, $1.8 billion on top of the spending of the entire surplus. Now, I know that you think you're putting yourselves in a really good position for negotiating with the House. Perhaps that's the case. But there are so many provisions in this bill intending to hurt Minnesotans. I don't know how you can get from one stage to the next and say this is just for negotiating. Minnesotans are watching what you're doing, and they're very concerned about new permanent increases in spending and $1.8 billion in new taxes and revenue raisers that will hurt our economy, hurt our families, hurt our businesses. Members, I hope you'll vote no, and I ask for a roll call vote.
There'll be a roll call. Further discussion? Secretary will take the roll.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Skoy?
Yes.
Senator Bach?
Yes.
Senator Dietzick?
Yes.
Senator Eaton?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Coonan?
Yes.
Senator Marty?
Yes.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Ortman?
No.
No, that's fine.
Senator Reiner?
Yes.
Senator Senjum?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
There being 8 ayes and 5 noes, the motion prevails and the bill will be sent to the Senate floor. We have one more item on the our agenda. Thank you very much, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
That is a consideration of the minutes from April 14th, 2015. It's in your packets. Senator Marty moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted.
Madam Chair and members, Monday we are going to hear education finance.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Just to make sure that the motion was to send the bill as amended. Just for clarification, we've already taken the vote. Is there anyone who feels the need to vote again?
No.
Thank you. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Monday we're going to do the education finance bill. After that, we will roll out the Senate tax bill. It will be posted online after the hearing. Tuesday, our plan is to walk through the omnibus tax bill and take amendments and pass it to the floor.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, before we adjourn, I would like to wish my well wishes, and I think the rest of the committee will want to join me in wishing Senator Rest a happy birthday.
Ho, ho.
Yes.
Oh.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair. Senator
Ortman. Can you repeat what you said? Did you say that you're going to have the omnibus bill rolled out on Tuesday, amendments the same day, and pass it the same day?
No, Senator Ortman. We're going to present the bill after the education finance bill on Monday.
Thank you.
And then we'll walk through it and have amendments on Tuesday and hopefully pass it on Tuesday.
I appreciate the distinction. Thank you.
Senator Mr. Chair, what time on Monday?
Members, I think it will be 8:30 on Monday morning.
Okay.
Seeing nothing else, committee's adjourned.